Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get some punch. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmuck with you for the next 60 minutes to talk NFL football and some Giants football as well. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Those are the two ways to get in touch and communicate us with us over the course of this program. Happy Friday. The week's almost at an end, which is great. Today we have a special guest. We'll be joined by Sam Monson, all the way from out across the pond, at PFF Sam on Twitter from Pro Football Focus, and he will help break down the free agency class in 2015 and talk some NFL football with us as well. So, we talked about the draft a lot, folks, and I think it's time to shift the focus over to free agency. And as you take a look at this free agency class, there are, I think, some interesting facets to take a peek at. You know, the Giants are not going to run around here, and Jerry Reese said this after the season was over. They're not going to go out there and sign a huge splash, big money free agent like a Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie or somebody like that. So they're probably going to go for more mid-ranged and lower-priced free agents to fit them into the cap space and determine exactly what the best fit is for the Giants moving forward. So that's the type of stuff we're going to talk about with our guest, Sam Monson, all the way out for Pro Football Focus. He joins us right now on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Sam, it's good to talk to you. How's it going over there, over the Atlantic, my friend?
It's good. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Well, let's get right to the free agency class first. And before we start getting into individual opinions and individual players, I want to touch on how you think the market is going to be. You have a lot of teams with a lot of cap space, and a lot of these teams have to use the cap space. How aggressive do you think this free agency period is going to be when it opens up on March 10th?
Yeah, it's going to depend who of the kind of marquee names are left when it gets through, you know, franchise tagging and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
The few guys that are left, the few top guys are going to get big, big money. And I think there's going to be so much money left that there's going to be a lot of kind of mid-level, mid-quality players that are going to get serious amounts of money. You know, guys that you wouldn't expect to be earning real big contracts are going to get paid.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the pattern we've seen in the past is that you'll get a couple of the really big guys go off right off the top of free agency. Then you're going to have a bit of a lull period. I wonder if that lull period is going to be quite as long this year as we've seen the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, it might be. I think a lot of that lull period is people kind of balking at the contract figures. You know, they've got to spend money, but they don't want to spend it on the guy you're trying to get the money for.
Yeah, absolutely, no question about it. All right, let's get into some of these positions now and some of these individual players. And let's start with some of the guys the Giants have first. I'm going to assume for a second that the Giants will do something with Jason Pierre-Paul so that he's not going to hit the open market. But I think one interesting guy to discuss is Antrell Roll. You guys did not grade him favorably last year over a Pro Football Focus, Sam. But he's a veteran. He's been in the league a long time. It is not a strong safety class in the draft. It's not particularly strong in free agency. How do you see the market coming along for Antrell Roll in free agency this year?
Yeah, and a lot of what we're down on Antrell Roll about is when he has to play the slot. And, you know, they've tried to get him out of the slot for years, but he's kind of capable of doing it, and they keep losing slot corners. So year after year, Roll ends up covering the slot. And when he does, he's exposed. So it's a little bit not his fault. You know, he's kind of doing what he shouldn't really be doing, and he's not doing well doing it. So we grade him badly. But I think if you just plug him in as a pure, strong safety, he wouldn't be a bad player. And I think he's young enough that there are going to be guys, there's going to be interest in him. You know, he's still an athlete. He's still capable of being a pretty good player. And I think as long as you don't need him to cover the slot, you know, you can put that there as a kind of a safety valve, extra bit of cover. But if that's not your plan, I think you'll have a decent market.
Yeah, and I think you saw that, Sam, in 2013 when the Giants didn't ask him to play the slot quite as much. He had one of his best seasons in the last 3 or 4 years, but then last season in 2014, when they had all those injuries, as you discussed, he once again had to cover for other people and invariably found himself out of position.
Yeah, it's just he's just not capable of doing it at this level, I think. You know, maybe in college when you could get by with just being a decent athlete. But in the NFL, covering the slot is a really tough gig. And, you know, it's going to be – it's really tough asking anybody who's not a specialist to do it, especially a guy who's a safety and not really designed for holding up against receivers one-on-one.
How do you evaluate the rest of the safety class? You guys had Mike Adams as your highest-ranked free agent safety, but he's 34 years old. And as you well know, Sam, the market for guys over 30 these days usually isn't the strongest. DeJuan Landry was let go. Will Hill's a restricted free agent. How do you view the rest of the safety class, and who do you think might be a good value for a team that's trying to find the starting safety in free agency?
There's a lot of interesting names out there. The only kind of marquee guy who's currently slated to hit free agency is Devin McCourty, but I don't think he gets anywhere near it. I think the
Agreed.
Patriots lock him up. So then you're kind of left with a bunch of guys, and the most interesting name I think there is Raheem Moore, who everyone remembers from the Broncos championship game for that horrible, horrible play that cost them the game, really. But he was having a really good season right up until that point. And, you know, there's no getting away from it. That was a terrible, terrible play. But it was one play in 1,000 that he played that year. And I think he's a pretty good safety. He graded this year just about average, but he was coming back from a horrible medical issue that almost cost him his leg in the off season. So at 25, I think there's more to come from him. I think he can be a good player.
Do you see him as more as your classic center fielder, or is he a guy that can step into the box if need be?
Yeah, I think he's more of a deep safety. He's much more of a free safety guy, a guy who plays, you know, deep middle. He's got some range. He's got a lot of good speed and athleticism back there. I think he's your free safety. There's a lot of guys, I think, that are more of that strong safety kind of role. There's guys like Denoris Searcy from Buffalo. Patrick Chung actually has become a pretty good strong safety. He's, you know, if you don't need him to cover the deep middle, if you don't want him in deep coverage, he's a pretty good player. But he's limited in that, you know, you really do need to use him as a box guy in covering the slot.
All right, I want to stay on defense, and we're joined by Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. Let's go to the linebacker position here, Sam, because I feel like you're not getting the number of linebackers coming out of college these days that fit a lot of these NFL systems, especially the 4-3, and invariably that's going to reflect at some point in the free agency classes. How do you view this linebacker class? Let's start in the middle first, since the Giants will probably be looking for some insurance in case John Beeson cannot stay healthy.
Yeah, this linebacker class is so thin that we're not even breaking it down by, you know, middle or outside. We're just lumping linebackers together. You know, that's the kind of stage we've got to. And the top guy on that list is Rolando McClain. So, you know, you're talking about a guy who just walked back into the league last year having essentially retired himself. So it's really not a good year to be searching for linebackers. But there are a few interesting names in there. You know, a guy like Nate Irving from Denver, I think, has shown a lot of good play in his time. He's a guy I think can definitely step into a bigger role, a more featured role, and contribute. The guy who I think is possibly most intriguing but would be a complete gamble is Brooks Reed from Houston. He was playing outside linebacker in their 3-4, but I think his natural position in the NFL might be inside linebacker in a 3-4 or middle linebacker in a 4-3. I think he's much more natural there. He's not really a natural pass rusher at this level. And I think because of his play, I don't think he'll have a particularly strong market. He's a guy I think you might be able to get on the cheap.
Ah, very interesting. That's a name I have not heard. I will put him on my list, and I will keep an eye out to see what happens with him. The Giants might also be looking for some depth, Sam, on the defensive line, specifically defensive tackle. What kind of D-tackles or even D-ends do you see on the market that fit a good run-stopping type of mold where you can plug them in there on first and second down and they can do a good job sealing that edge, stuffing that middle, and doing a good job stopping the opposing team's running game?
I think it's a good year to want run-stuffing defensive tackle. I think there's a lot of guys out there and guys that aren't going to go for much money because it's just not something the league values anymore.
Yeah.
You know, There's guys like Pat Sims from Oakland, Kendrick Ellis from the Jets. There's a lot of guys out there. Dan Williams, I think, from Arizona has been basically a two-down nose tackle for them. I think he could probably do more. I'd be interested to see him in more of a three-down role, or at least see him used as more of a rotation guy than strictly a two-down run stuffer. I think those three guys would all be very good run-stuffing D-tackles, and I don't think any of them would break the bank.
We're joined by Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. And, Sam, let's flip over to the offensive line. The Giants are trying to improve running the football in 2015, and they're pretty flexible in terms of bringing in a guard or a tackle. Some believe they can move Justin Pugh around, depending on who they get either in the draft or free agency. And when you take a look at this free agent class on the offensive line, where do you see value? I mean, we've already seen King Dunlop, a guy who was a second and third stringer in Philly not long ago, got a pretty big contract. This offseason, Brian Bulaga is due to cash in. Orlando Franklin's talking about wanting a $40, $50 million contract. How do you see this market for the offensive lineman breaking out this spring?
There's quite a few good players there, but like you said, they're going to want strong money. You know, a guy like Orlando Franklin, I think, is a pretty good player. I think he's a better tackle than he is a guard, but he's got, you know, position versatility. He's a good guy, but he's wanting big money, and I think he's going to get it. So that kind of tells you the kind of money you're dealing with for guys who, in the abstract, you might not think deserve it. But I think if you're looking for an offensive lineman in free agency, that's the kind of figures you're going to be looking at, or it's the kind of figures you're going to have to pay up. So where the value is going to be interesting. It might be with guys that are of a certain age. You know, a guy like Doug Free, I think, is 31 years old now. He's on the wrong side of 30, and he's still playing pretty well. So it'd be interesting to see if that age alone affects the kind of dollar figure he's able to command. You know, if it does, he might be the kind of guy to go after.
Now, you guys have always talked about Mike Iapati as one of the best run blockers in the NFL, but he struggles in pass protection. Is that something that you think he can improve at pass protection, or is he simply too stiff side to side where he's going to be a great run blocker, but he's never going to develop into that pass protector?
I just don't think he has the quickness to hold up as a pass protector. And, you know, I think we've seen it long enough and through with enough help coming his way that I don't think it's going to happen suddenly, even in a different venue in a new offense. I just don't think he has that in him. And it's been a while now as well since we've seen his really best form in terms of punishing run blocking as well. So he's a guy, he might be the best free agent guard available, but he certainly isn't a perfect kind of specimen, or not a guy that doesn't have some question marks about him.
So really, you're actually seeing some decline in even his run blocking?
Yeah, I don't think we've seen the best of his run blocking for a couple of years now. He hasn't been bad, and he's been, you know, struggling with some injuries, but we haven't seen the really dominant kind of player that we saw earlier in his career.
Interesting. Curious to see, and I'll stick on the offensive line. They're not free agents. They're on the Giants, but I figure I got you. I might as well ask you about them. What do you guys think about the first two seasons of Justin Pugh and the first season of Weston Richburg as the Giants try to put together this offensive line for the future?
Yeah, Pugh, I think, has shown a lot. You know, he's a guy that you could be pretty confident in going forward. He might not ever be, you know, a truly elite player at the position, but he's a guy I think you can be pretty confident in and be happy with how he's performed. Richburg's the guy that I think is far more questionable. I don't think he had a good first year at all. And it's a position it's tough to plug guys straight in and expect them to perform, you know, anywhere in that interior. It seems to be a position that guys, you know, expect people to be able to plug in, but those guard positions in the center spot, whichever one you end up going with them eventually, they're not easy positions for rookies to come in and play. You know, it's tough. The guys in the trenches opposite them have by and large been in the league for a long time and know every trick in the book. So, you know, the first year from a guard or from a center tends to be them getting pretty much victimized week after week. So,
yeah, no doubt about it, Sam. And I think the Giants hope that maybe moving Richburg to his natural college business at center in his second year might help his progress along a little bit.
Yeah, it's possible. And, you know, it's obviously too soon to give up on a guy after one season. So it's more a case of, you know, his performance going into his second year is going to be big for that line wherever he plays.
And like you said, oftentimes you'll get that jump in year two for these offensive linemen. When you talk about Pugh, do you see him as a long-term tackle, or do you guys view him as a potential better player at guard?
It's tough to say. You know, we haven't really seen him at guard. I think he's played well enough as a tackle. I don't see a problem going forward with him at tackle, especially if you improve what's inside him. You know, if you get guys back healthy like Jeff Schwartz, you know, those Schwartz certainly is a very good right guard at his best. So if you can give him that kind of help inside, I think he can hold up on the edge.
Common knowledge seems to be that the Giants will be looking for a two-way tight end at some point this offseason for someone that can also catch but also block. How do you view Larry Donnell, first of all, and how he performed last year for the Giants as a receiver and a blocker? And who on this free agent market, we just heard Anthony Fasano was cut loose, could match that profile as a two-way tight end that wouldn't cost a ton that could come in and help the Giants in that regard in 2015?
I think Donnell's a pretty good receiver. I don't think he played particularly well as a run blocker at all. In fact, we graded him pretty badly as a run blocker. So he's a guy I think you can have as your move tight end, you can have as your primary receiver, but you're definitely going to want to add somebody to the mix who can block. And there really aren't that many guys out there that can do both. I think if you want a blocking tight end, a second tight end, you can do a pretty good job run blocking and, you know, at least has something about him as an athlete. I think Virgil Green is the guy to look at, and from Denver again. He's almost completely the opposite of what he was supposed to be. You know, he was supposed to be this athletic receiving tight end, but he's actually developed into this really solid blocker and hasn't really had the production as a pass receiver. So he's a guy I think you can definitely bring in and add as the real run blocker in the formation and then, you know, use him occasionally as a second tight end.
Very interesting. We're joined by Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. And, Sam, I want to quickly touch on the running back position. Are there any guys in free agency, and we've talked about some of the guys on the show, maybe like an Antoine Smith, someone like that, a Jacquizz Rodgers, that fits that explosive third down back role? They have Rashad Jennings who can pass protect, he can catch, but he's not, you know, make a big play at any time type of guy. So what the Giants would theoretically be looking for is a quasi-replacement for David Wilson. Obviously, you're not going to find somebody as talented in free agency as the guy you drafted in the first round, but is there somebody that profiles as that big play type of threat of running back that could be available in free agency this year?
I think there's tons of guys in free agency for running backs, especially for that kind of role. You know, running back has just become so devalued a position in the NFL that teams are perfectly willing to cast aside guys that are still pretty talented because they know they'll take another one in the draft and they'll replace most of what they left. So guys like Antoine Smith, like you mentioned, Shane Vereen is going to hit the open market. C.J. Spiller may hit the market. Even Justin Forsett, who was basically a third down back for his entire career and finally through injuries this year got a shot at the kind of starting gig in Baltimore. He's a perfect guy like that as well. I think one of those guys will be available for not a huge amount of money.
How much do you think DeMarco Murray is going to eventually wind up with? I mean, this is the quote-unquote, and no pun intended, million-dollar question for nobody more important than him. Are people going to be scared off by all the work that he had last year and, like you said, the devaluation of the running back position? Or is he going to get the type of money he's looking for, you know, a $40 million contract with 20-something million guaranteed?
He'll definitely get paid. I think the things you mentioned there, the workload, that's the kind of stuff that's going to cap how much he gets, you know. In any other year, if you take a guy that played as well as he did this season with 20, you know, at age 27 and send him into the open market, he would get a monster contract. He'd be the best paid running back in the league, and he'd be setting the standards. But he has got some injury history, and he did have such a huge workload that it's going to scare people off. There's no two ways about it. He's over the threshold that, you know, every single running back, I think, that's had that workload in the past has broken down pretty immediately afterwards. So, you know, I think there's a few enough of them that's, you can't say it's for certain it's a causality thing. So he's going to get decent money and somebody's going to pay him to be a good starter, but it's going to be enough to scare teams away from really selling him.
We're joined by Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. Two more questions from me, Sam. Number one, obviously Odell Beckham took the NFL world in New York City by storm last year. You know the spectacular plays. You know the unbelievable record-setting numbers at a rookie. As you guys graded his performance play-by-play on the field, did your grades reflect the type of performance and final numbers he put up as a rookie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was one of our top graded receivers despite missing the four games, I think, at the start of the season. He finished the season as our second graded receiver, I think, in terms of receiving alone, just behind Antonio Brown. and ahead of everybody else, despite missing the time at the beginning of the year. You can't overstate what he did. It's probably the single greatest rookie season since Randy Moss. And you're talking about a guy who just, from day one, played the game completely different to other rookie receivers. I've never seen a guy attack the ball in the air the way he does. He never lets it into his body, always goes and high points and extends his hands to go catch the ball. And that's just a coaching dream. You know, he's an absolutely fantastic talent, and it's scary to think if he can get much better than that.
Absolutely. Sam, final question. As you move forward here in free agency, the draft is coming up as well. Now, you guys do some work on the draft, but I've read a lot of places you're trying to expand the type of work you're doing in the analysis of a lot of the college players. We've had Pete Domelatis on before talk about all the work and the grading you do and how your system works in the NFL. I would love to hear about some of the stuff you guys have in store for the draft and some of the stuff you guys are planning on expanding and doing with some of the college prospects and try to determine how they might project into the NFL.
Well, this season was our first year running college football focus. It was the first year we graded college more than a couple of snaps here and there to test the waters. So this year was a kind of proof of concept year, but we have every single college game from this past season graded and in our databases. And we're using that to sell to NFL teams, to do some deals with networks and that kind of thing. But we'll also use it to do some content and to break out a few kind of interesting stats and figures as we get to the draft.
Sam, that's fantastic. I can't tell you what a great, useful tool Pro Football Focus is in what we do here and doing this show. And I think you guys are really informative and help the media understand the game much better. We'd love to have you on again sometime soon. We appreciate the time today. Have a great one. All right, pal?
Anytime. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, thanks, Sam. That's Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. You can find them at Twitter at PFF_Sam. We thank you for joining us on Giants.com. Now it's you, me, phone calls, and Twitter at 201-939-4513. Let's load them up. It's a Friday. Let's relax. Let's have some fun. Mika in Tennessee or Micah? Micah, what's going on, pal?
Hey, I had a question about Brian Hardline. Do you think that this might, hit him up and pay him or what?
You know what, Micah? I think it's an interesting question. Hardline's a guy that had a couple big years a couple years ago. Last year he had a down season, and it's funny, Pro Football Focus actually tweeted earlier how much his grade went down last year based on his performance in Miami. I think Hardline fits the profile of the type of guy the Giants should be looking for, a guy that is a possession receiver. He has some size. He has some strength. He's not afraid to work over the middle. I think all those things together is certainly the type of player you're looking for in Brian Hartline. Now, the question remains, what type of money is Hartline going to get? I don't know right now. How crazy is this market going to get? I don't know right now. But I do think that's a guy you look at, and he could fit the type of role the Giants will be looking to fill this offseason. I think it's a good name.
Yeah, and then another question about the draft. What do you think – if the Giants draft Brandon Scherff in the first round, and in the second round they draft Denzel Perryman, he looks pretty good. He looks pretty good for a second-round draft pick, and I believe that he'd be a good middle linebacker, maybe to back up John Beeson for his first season.
I think those would be two picks that fit needs. I think both players are very good players. I don't think that would be a bad result at all, to be quite honest with you.
Do you think it would be possible at all?
Yeah, honestly, I think there's a chance that Scherff might be off the board at 9. I put it at 50-50 right now, to be honest with you. I still think he'll be the first offensive lineman off the board. And I think there's a pretty good chance Perryman's going to be there in the second round, because I'm not sure that NFL teams view him as a three-down linebacker. He's more of a run stuffer, which is fine. You put him in there on first and second down, have him stuff the run like Brandon Spikes did so well the last couple of years. And then on third down, you bring in a guy that's better in coverage. In this day and age in the NFL, that's fine. And I think if you can get Perryman in the second round, I think it's realistic, and I think it certainly is possible.
All right, well, thank you, John, and have a good afternoon and stuff.
Thanks, Micah. You too, man. Appreciate the call. 201-939-4513. And, guys, I'm still going back and forth, and I'm not going to tell you who I think the Giants should draft until after we get through free agency and we get, a couple weeks before. I'm just going to tell you the guys I think they should consider when they get to that spot and I think would be good fits. And I think Scherff's one of those guys. if it's between him and some of the defensive linemen, I'm not sure which way I would go right now. I might be leaning a little bit towards the defensive line, to be honest with you. But I think Perryman, as a guy that can be insurance to Beeson and be a future middle linebacker here for a long time, he fits that type of mold of guy that I want playing middle linebacker for me. 201-939-4513. Wow, full bank of calls. I like it, guys. Sam in Washington, D.C. is up next. Sam, what's going on?
Hey, John, how you doing?
Doing well, Sam. How are you?
Doing all right. We're kind of loaded with snow down here. How about you guys up in New York?
You know what? I think we're getting some flurries today and tomorrow, but I think you guys are actually getting the worst of it right now. I think Charlotte was supposed to get something like half a foot this week, too. I think they only ended up getting a few inches. But from what I understand, you guys in the Mid-Atlantic have been roughed up a little bit, huh?
Definitely. Not something we're used to, but, you know, hey, we're dealing with it, especially for me, pretty much growing up in New York and moving down here, you know, to find work. But talking football, for no means am I really going to try to say that we should let JPP go. But I wanted to get your take on being that the draft is saturated with linemen, and it looks like we have a pretty good free agency class with pass rushers and folks in the front four. How do you think that impacts the negotiations on how much JPP would be valued at? Not probably from the Giants' perspective, but from another team that may be interested in giving him a deal.
You know, that's a good question, and I agree. I think the edge rushers in this free agency class are pretty strong. You talk about the Justin Houstons, the Pernell McPhees, you know, Jason Worlds. Those are edge rushers. Guys like that, Brandon Graham. I get what you're saying, but that being said, JPP is still on the top of that list. So, and at his age, only 26, I think he's still going to be one of the guys that are highly targeted. So I still think there will be a lot of interest from other teams in free agency. The thing about the draft, I think, is interesting. And generally speaking, even some of the best defensive linemen that come out of college, it takes them a year to get acclimated to the NFL to become great players. You saw Aaron Donald come on the second half of last year and become very good, but he was very quiet the first 6-7 games. Anthony Barr is a guy that came on late in the year, but he started slow. Jadeveon Clowney couldn't get on the field because of injuries. You go back, talk about DeMarcus Ware as a rookie, only something like 5 sacks. It took him a while to get into the mix in the NFL. Even J.J. Watt's rookie year, certainly not close to being as dominant as his second year in the NFL. So I don't think you can say, well, I think we can live with letting JPP walk and replace him with one of these draft picks. Yeah, in 3 years, that could work. But I'm not sure you could afford to let your best defensive lineman walk away this year when you're trying to get into the playoffs with Eli Manning, with Odell Beckham, and you're trying to make a run. I think there is a certain amount of risk when you go down that path.
And I totally agree with you, John. Now, would there be even a probability where a team would probably say, probably not necessarily JPP, but you look at guys like the guy who's coming out of Kansas City, Houston, where a team would probably say, hey, instead of you know, putting so much of a value on one guy, maybe we could spend the same amount of money on two guys. One guy who i.e. is probably your first and second downer, and then your third down pass rusher. Or would you rather spend, you know, the $15,000 on one guy like JPP? Because I'm saying this because I hear a lot of fans saying, well, you know, we shouldn't pay JPP $15,000. Well,
million.
I mean, $15 million. Yeah, grand. Probably for a down, $15,000 a down,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But you shouldn't pay JPP $15 million. Well, do you see two guys out there that you could probably split $15 million that are going to be consistent, reliable, probably one role, one trick pony kind of a guys, versus giving one guy $15 million where you could put him in there for all three downs? And I'll take your perspective on that off the air. Thank you for the time, John. Appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate it, Sam. Thanks a lot. You know what, Sam? That's a good question. That's a good question. Are you going to get more value out of splitting that theoretical $15 million into two players, have them split snaps? Will they give you the same amount of production as Jason Pierre-Paul? Here's the problem. I think it's very hard in this era of free agency with all the money flying around to get guys in free agency at a good value. The very nature of free agency in every sport, basketball, baseball, football, you're generally speaking going to overpay for production. Now, I think Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie last year was a rare exception to that rule. I think the Giants got him on a very good deal. But most times, you're going to have to overpay. Now, so, I mean, you're going to overpay for that one guy or you're going to overpay for the two. So, that's a really good question. You know what? I guess it depends on the type of guys you can bring in. I mean, how much is Brian Arakpo going to make considering all the injuries he's had? Are you going to be able to get him on the cheap, play him on pass rushing downs and play a run stopper on first and second? Yeah, you could do something like that. Or do you want to try to play Arakpo all three downs and roll the dice that he can stay healthy? That has often come up snake eyes for the Giants the last couple of years, counting on guys to be healthy. So I think that's a really good question. I haven't thought about it. You gave me something to think about, Sam. I'm writing that down, and I'm going to, you know, give that some thought over the weekend. And I will try to have a better answer for you next week. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Dre in Atlanta. Dre, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Big John? How you doing?
Doing all right, Dre. What's up, pal?
Quick question. I was looking at Ali Marpet, you know, New York native. You know, even though he came from a Division III school, or pretty much a very small school, it's like he has the physical attributes. You can get him in later rounds, probably 5 or 6, and, you know, he'd just be a project.
Well, I mean, he seems to be moving up into that round 3 or 4 area based on his combine performance. But I see your point. I don't disagree. He would be a guy that you could develop into an NFL player over a couple of years.
Right. You know, because I'm looking – from what I see is I'm just listening to you and reading. I said we're going to grab probably a defensive tackle in the first round and probably grab – if we can't get a free agency, grab a second round offensive tackle. Or we could convert either a tackle or guard, a pretty much, you know, versatile player. Because, you know, we focused on the offense last year kind of in some sort of way other than Bromley and, you know, and Burhe. We kind of neglected the defensive line. So I think they're going to try to, you know, use that 9 pick for a defensive tackle. So, you know, someone that's going to be a plugger that has the ability to rush the passer, but still his primary function will be to stop the run.
Well, the one guy, Dre, that really fits that description is the Danny Shelton kid out of Washington.
But he may not be there.
No, he may not. That is true.
And everything is contingent on what happens in that first pick. You know, who picks who. Philly, it seems like Philly's trying to move up to get, do some trades and try to get old boy from Oregon.
Yeah, I don't see it happening, to be honest.
Mariota.
Yeah, honestly, I don't see that happening. I think it's going to cost way too much of Philly to move up to make that type of move.
Yeah, I was about to say, it seems like they're going to have to give it a farm just to be able to get him. But like I said, everything is contingent on who goes first. If Winston goes first, then it's going to be a domino effect. But it all depends how things flow. But my last comment, it seemed like the Giants are really in a predicament when it comes to safety. That position right there is there's not a good depth in the draft. It's not a good depth in free agency. Everyone is speculating who's going to do what. You got teams that still, you know, waiving players due to, financial cuts.
Yep.
But we have to wait. As McCourty, we have to be realistic. Some of these top players, one, we're not going to be able to pay them, or two, they're going to be franchised. You know, they're staying with their prospective teams. We re-sign. So we're pretty much out in the open. So we really have to do our due diligence and try to get role, you know, to, I wouldn't say take a hometown discount, but not make the same mistakes we did with Tuck. You know, sometimes, you know, all good money is not always the best money. Sometimes, you know, a little loyalty, and, you know, we do need to compensate him on the fact that since he's been here, he's played all 16 games for the amount of time he's been here. We do need to compensate on it and look into that. We have him doing more than he's intended to, and we need to pay him for his versatility. I listened to your comments up there. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Jay. Well, the trick is, though, too, you don't want to pay Antro for the production that he had. You want to pay him for the production he's going to have. So that's always the trick. You don't pay a guy based on past performance. You pay him based on what type of performance you want him to have in the future. And, you know, talking to Sam from Pro Football Focus earlier in the show, Sam Monson, he makes a good point. I feel like when Roll plays his position and he's allowed to play safety, he plays well. When he's asked to do a lot more, that's when he has the tendency to struggle. Now, getting the sense of looking at Antro's Twitter account, does he seem anxious to take a discount? I'm not sure. What are the Giants willing to pay him? Nobody knows yet. The Giants are figuring that out. They haven't even made any offers yet. That hasn't happened. So those are all types of things that moving forward, well, I shouldn't say I don't know if they've made any offers to Roll yet. I don't know that. But, you know, nothing's been publicized, obviously. So you have to figure out moving forward here what the right number is. And the Giants might not know what the right number is until they know what they're doing with JPP. Are they going to have to franchise him? Are they going to be able to reach a long-term deal with him? Or maybe they're not going to franchise him at all. Are they going to give Eli Manning an extension? What other possible offseason roster moves could they make to free up more cap room? I mean, these are all questions that are yet to be answered. And until they are, knowing the type of money they can afford to offer a guy like Roll is really up in the air, and nobody knows yet. I'm not even sure the Giants know yet. So moving forward, and look, they have a couple weeks now before free agency. It starts on March 10th. Right now it's February 27th, so you got about 11 days, give or take, 12 days. And the Giants will figure out what the best thing is to do. But we do know one thing. They're going to have to make some additions at safety because the only guys they have in the roster right now are Cooper Taylor and Nat Burhe. Neither guy has proven they can start. Cooper Taylor hasn't even proven he's able to stay healthy. Burhe was a good special teamer last year, but didn't do a whole lot on defense. So you're going to have to bring in some veterans to fill that void in some way, shape, or form. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Let's say what's up to Brian in North Carolina. You're up next, Brian.
Hey, John. Long time no speak, man.
What's up, bud?
I was calling because I wanted to just break down one of the things that I had an opinion on. You know, everybody is, you know, Giants fans on Facebook. They're like, okay, yeah, you got these Todd Gurley characters. I think people are failing to realize, okay, we have another running back. Well, I have a lot of points. But we have another running back in, I think, Orleans Darkwa, who I felt like, you know, could be a great addition to that running core.
Great might be a little strong, but I think he could be a contributor.
A contributor, okay. I would also like to say, yes, you know, as far as, you know, I'm going to go on a limb and say, you know, I look at the, you know, the offense as well, like the wide receiver. I know everyone is like, okay, we with Victor Cruz, you know, being injured, how are we, you know, we might need to go get another wide receiver. But again, a lot of people I feel like have forgotten about the kid Marcus Harris. That was his name?
Yeah, Sue Harris. When Marcus Harris, you got it.
Yeah, right. You know, that actually I feel, you know, would be a great contribution as well.
Yeah, but I don't think, you know, I think it depends on the type of wide receiver you're looking to add. Some people want to add a top first-round pick type of talent. Like Marcus Harris is a guy that's probably not going to be that type of player, but I think Harris could compete for a receiver that can maybe help in the return game, can help on special teams, and be that fifth or sixth wide receiver on the roster.
Right. And my final opinion is, you know, I feel like, you know, with the offense,
yes.
As far as getting, we got Ben Mack, the offensive coordinator. And I feel like, you know, a great addition that we got back was Mike Sullivan. Because remember, when Mike Sullivan was the QB coach for Eli in that last Super Bowl run, Eli was playing lights out. And I just want to compare. And I think, like, if you compare the expectations of Ben McAdoo with how Mike Sullivan ran that offense with that Kevin Gilbride, I feel like, you know, we're probably going to see another career highlight season for Eli just with those two working with them.
Well, I mean, look, I think Mike Sullivan's a good coach, but I think Eli Manning is going to be really good this year because he's a really good quarterback. One, and two, it's a second year in Ben McAdoo's system. And it's funny, I smiled, Brian, when you said I think Eli would be great because Mike Sullivan's back. I remember back in 2010, when we were, you know, doing some variation of the show, and I had everybody calling in wanting to fire Mike Sullivan because in his first year as a Giants quarterback coach, Eli had one of the worst years of his career. So I just think it's funny how things swing back and forth based on how we go season to season.
Yes, sir. You know, I just, like I said, man, it's just, I mean, like you said, 2010, first season, and then to see, you know, Eli, you know, just him coming to form, you know, with that Super Bowl run. That's why, you know, I can't wait. I'm wearing my Victor Cruz jersey right now. I can't wait for him to return. And I feel like, you know, his motivation, I feel like, you know, he's going to wow a lot of naysayers. I really do. And Vic, if you're hearing this, man, I support you 193,000%, man. Get back, man.
Thanks, Brian.
All No problem.
Appreciate it, man. And I can tell you one thing about Victor Cruz. He's been here. Maybe if not every day, most days I see him either in the cafeteria or I see him in the locker room doing rehab. So Victor's working his rear end off trying to get back. That's the one thing, don't doubt. Look, you never know how a knee and a body is going to react to surgery. Meniscus injury is a serious injury. We'll see. I'm sorry. A patella tendon is a serious injury, not meniscus, my bad. I got the Derrick Rose, Victor Cruz confusion there. The patella tendon is a serious injury. So who knows how he's going to react to it? He's rehabbing. He's quote-unquote ahead of schedule. But until he goes out there and tries to run and starts to cut and he tries to get back on the field for training camp, and that's what his goal is. It's not going to be the off-season activities like OTAs and minicamp. It's going to be training camp. That's what he said to us. We'll see. Who knows how it's going to go. It's just a matter of time and waiting. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Anthony is in Brooklyn. Anthony, good morning. How are you?
Hey, John, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Bo. What's up?
My first time ever calling any show. So.
I appreciate that.
So bear with me. I listen every day, and I really appreciate what you guys do, especially when the season's over. Gives me something to look forward to on a daily basis.
Keep the football hot stove heat, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Big draft guy. Used to go to Roosevelt Hotel when I was a kid with my uncle. Don't want to talk about the draft. I agree with you. We got to go to free agency first before we can even figure out what we need in the draft, but there's a guy that nobody mentions as a linebacker. I know he's been injured the last couple of years. I was banging a drum for him actually when the Giants drafted JPP. It's Sean Weatherspoon from Atlanta. I know he's been injured, pretty serious injuries the last couple of years. Tremendous talent, in my opinion. And, you know, I think it would be perfect on the Giants. Obviously, we don't know about his health. We don't know how much money he would actually garner. Well, I don't think it would be a tremendous contract being that, you know, he's been injured. I'm sure Atlanta wants to keep him. What are your thoughts on Sean Weatherspoon? Nobody seems to be talking about him.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's an interesting name, Anthony. I really do. He's a guy that, according to Pro Football Focus, was basically an average linebacker last year. He's just 27 years old, so he has a lot of years in his prime left. So I think
he
didn't
play the whole season last year. I mean, he basically missed the whole entire season.
Right. So, I mean, you know what? You're right. He had zero snaps last year. You're 100% right. I was looking at the wrong column. I was looking at rating instead of snaps. But he's a guy that, look, you're right, he's talented, he's a good athlete, he's played well in the past, and I think if you can get him at a decent number, I think you bring him in and you give it a shot. Here's the problem, though. You don't want to wind up in a situation where you're depending on him the same way you were, quote-unquote, depending on Beeson last year, and then all of a sudden the injuries crop up again. And then you're sitting there, oh, no, now we got to figure out who our backup's going to be. So I think if you can bring him in on something close to like a, you know, veterans minimum type of deal, and you give him an opportunity to compete, give him a chance to stay healthy. He played in the 4-3 in Atlanta. I think that's a guy that you can run in, and, you know, that can be a low-risk, high-reward type of signing. And those are some of the type of signings the Giants are going to have to make, Anthony, given their salary cap situation.
Absolutely, and that's why it's intriguing to me. As I just said, I was kind of banging the table the year the Giants took JPP. It's just that he was my guy. And, you know, I think what's intriguing about him is I think he could play all the linebacker positions. He can play middle. You know, he can play – I think he can play all three of them, you know, again, when he's healthy. Just one more comment, John. You know, I'm kind of in a minority about why the defense against the run was as bad as it was last year. I mean, I understand that the line is the most important aspect in defense and offense, but I just felt like the linebacker play was pretty poor. And my thinking is misdirection was the thing that hurt us more than anything last year. I never really felt we were blown off the line of scrimmage. You know, the kid out of Ohio State had a good year. I didn't feel like we were super weak. You know, obviously JPP plays the run very well. Ayers plays the run very well. I don't really feel, and again, we could always improve there, so I have no issue if the Giants draft somebody there.
Yeah.
It's just that I felt there was a linebacker play, just a lack of, you know, the combination of obviously strength, speed, and everything you need to be a great linebacker. I know a lot of people want to minimize the linebackers today like they minimize the running backs. I just feel like the better defenses, whether they're 4-3 or 3-4, but especially the 4-3 defense who play well. Right. Take a, you know, look at Seattle when they lost their middle linebacker. They didn't play as well with that Wagner. They just did not. You take Kuechly. These guys, I mean, you know, they don't come along every day, obviously. But it's very important, in my opinion, to have a super, super, super talented linebacker on a Giant defense. I really believe that's what they're missing. And obviously safety, as we know. Those are the two key positions, in my opinion, on defense that they really need to address.
You know, Anthony, it's funny. You know, just going off of Pro Football Focus, we know it's not an exact science, but I think it's a good tool to use. The only two players that the Giants had that played a decent amount of snaps on defense that graded positively against the run were the two guys you mentioned, Jason Pierre-Paul and Jonathan Hankins. Jaquan Williams was slightly above average. Kerry Wynn, in the few snaps he played, did a decent job. They actually had it. It was actually confusing to me because Robert Ayers, as you mentioned, was a very good run defender when he was with Denver. But this year, according to Pro Football Focus, and I think we did see it at times when he was a little undisciplined, he actually ranked below average this year against the run. And you're right. The other linebackers, you know, Devon Kennard was about average. They did not rank too well against the run. So I do think they need some support beyond JPP and Hankins. And you're right. It 100% includes the linebacker level. This is not just the defensive line. It's the front seven's job. And quite frankly, a lot of times, it's even throw the strong safety into that mix. It's his job, too, to step up into the box and help stop that run. And I don't think Giants had that consistently enough beyond JPP and Jonathan Hankins last year.
No doubt. And listen, you know, we all know this. We don't want to cry about it. But for me, the loss of Will Hill killed us last year. I didn't call you guys, and I listened to all those conversations, and I understand all the reasons why. But to me, I mean, guys who didn't know Will Hill is, I had friends of mine, big fans of football, but they don't really follow the Giants. And I said, watch the game against the Longs. I had my friend who's a fan. And I said, look, this guy is a superstar in the making. We had to let him go. But to me, he was a big loss to us. But Ayers is interesting because, again, you're right. With Denver, he was noted for playing the run very
right.
well. I think it's because of the position he played, right? Because he played the five technique.
Exactly.
When he played the end for the Giants, he actually rushed the passer very, very well. It was much of a surprise.
No, you're 100% right, because when he was in Denver, he played that 3-4 defensive end, which is the one-gap scheme where you're basically just trying to take on two blockers and free up your linebackers to make plays. In this scheme, he was lined up right across the offensive lineman, and he actually did a much better job rushing the passer than stopping the run, at least in my opinion from what I saw. And Pro Football Focus's ratings confirm that as well. So I think if you plug in Ayers, though, at that left-end spot, I think he'll set the edge fairly well. He's strong enough, and I think he'll do a pretty good job, getting to the passer as well.
No, listen, I don't have a problem with it, what they have right now. We could definitely use another tackle, but hey, one more thing. Listen, I got to give a shout out to Charlie. I love when he calls, man. I get the biggest giggle out of it. And a lot of times I agree with him, believe it or not. He thinks out of the box, which I appreciate.
Thanks, Anthony. I appreciate you calling in and being part of the show, man. Thanks a lot. And wow, we got a Charlie in Portland, Maine fan. I don't have many of those. Usually I get, Charlie's calling in. Charlie. Yeah, Charlie. Hopefully Charlie's not buried under like 4 feet of snow up there in Maine, by the way. Yeah, they got it bad up there, man. It's it might be about 8 feet. You might be right. It's, I feel bad for New England, man. Boston, Buffalo, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire. I mean, sure, the skiing up there is great. I'm not a skiing guy myself. I'm going to tear my knees up. But they got absolutely hammered up there. And thank goodness it wasn't so bad down here. 201-939-4513. I got three calls in the line. I got 10 minutes to go. Let's get them all in. Big is in New Jersey. Big, what's going on? Big. Hello, yeah. Big.
Hey, how's it going, John?
I'm doing all right, Big. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I just got just two questions. What do you think is a fair market value for Antrell Roll?
That's a good question.
I was thinking like 2 years, 6 million, 2 years, 5. Like, listen, he's one of the highest paid safeties in football.
Well, Big, I will tell you this. I think Antrell will probably find a bigger deal than 2 years, $6 million elsewhere.
Okay.
And again, I don't know a darn thing. This is me simply speculating, and I'm throwing out a guess. If I had to guess, I would say he would probably get somewhere around 3 years, $10 to $14 million.
At 32 years old? That's shocking.
It is a very weak safety class. And again, that is a guess. I have no idea. That is simply speculation. No one knows how it's going to go. But based on people I've talked to and some of the guests we've had, that's where it might, in the neighborhood, it might land.
Wow. Wow. And just one more point. I just got one more question. Now, listen, John Beeson, his cap number is $6.9 million. You got people like Navarro Bowman at like $7.1 million and Patrick Willis at $7.7 million. There's no way in hell John Beeson can have that cap number at 6.9, the way he's injured it. Like the Giants, I know Cullen Jenkins took a pay cut already. You think the Giants have asked him to take a pay cut and he's refused, or like, because he should have, like, we cut Kiwanuka. He has to restructure that. He has to do something with his cap number. There's no way. I was gonna ask you, what do you think he's worth? Because there's no way an injury prone middle linebacker is worth the cap number 6.9 million. It's unheard of.
Hey, look, the bottom line is that he's under contract. You know, the Giants, if they are talking to him about something like that, they don't talk about it publicly. So I don't know. Nobody knows what those conversations are, if those conversations are even taking place. But as the Giants try to prepare for free agency, they'll do everything they can to maximize their cap space and keep the best players on this roster as they can.
Yeah, well, he has to lower, because, I mean, I can see his value at maybe 4 million or something, maybe something like that, 5, but 6.9 on the books for John Beeson, he can't even stay on the field. Like, I don't know, it bothers me, that cap number with John Beeson. And I just got one more thing to say. You said earlier this week, you said, Mike, are you done? Are you done, Mike? Are you done? That's all I got to say, John. All right, you have a good weekend.
All right, thanks, Big. I appreciate
all right,
it. Thanks, bud. Oh, man. 201-939-4513. Well, see, you know, Mike called in. He was all upset. He was all angry. Apparently not a fan. I tried to have a conversation with him and actually try to, you know, dissect why he felt listening to the show was like going to the dentist. But he didn't want to have a conversation. He just wanted to rant like a maniac, so we had to let him go. If he wants to call back and have a, you know, civilized conversation, I'd love to do it, but he didn't have much interest. Keith in Kentucky. You're up next, Keith. What's going on, pal?
Yeah, John, how you doing?
What's going on, Keith?
Yeah, my connection's actually good. So guys like Mike, they call the show when people like me struggle to get on the show, you know?
What's going on, Keith? How are you?
Nothing much. You and Paul a bunch of tweets, shot them down, but I did more investigation, and, I'm kind of convinced we need to solidify the offense and the defensive line. Now I did a little more research. There's a kid that Marpet kid. I definitely think in the middle rounds we need to go with this kid just as a project, but get Sheriff if he's there. I don't think he's going to be there. And have you ever checked out that kid Malcolm Brown?
Yes, and you know, it's funny. Actually, I'm trying to think. I was reading a mock draft yesterday. I'm not sure if it was McShay. I don't think it was McShay's. I think it was Daniel Jeremiah's most recent mock draft. And I think they had Malcolm Brown going in the top 12 in that one. So he is rising up some draft boards, and he's a guy that is a pretty good run stuffer. I'm not sure how much he's going to do for you rushing the passer. I'm not sure based on what I've read about him, and I'll continue to do more work on him going forward, if he's worth the 9th overall pick, but I do think he's going to be a very good NFL player.
Okay. And all in the second round, I don't know what everybody else thinks about this Max Williams, that kid. I've seen this, his highlights, man. We need something like that. I know Larry Donnell, he looks promising, but I really want a dual tight end threat, because I know Eli would crush everybody. If we could solidify the line, then have a two-way tight end along with Larry Donnell.
Hey, you know what? And the funny thing about it, and I think Anthony Fasano was just let go by the Chiefs, if I'm not mistaken. I think that report came out this morning or late afternoon yesterday. And I think Fasano, you know, he's not a big name. He's not a sexy name, but he blocks. He's a dependable wide receiver. He's not going to fly down the seam and catch the ball 30 yards down the field, but he can be a possession receiver who can do all right in the red zone. I think a guy like Fasano, who's not going to demand a ton of money, is, like you said, the perfect guy that can do both, come in here, compliment Donnell. You can still use Donnell in the passing game on third down if you want, and I think he would be that type of player, would be a great fit to bring in here to solidify that tight end core.
Okay, then that brings me a question. If we do bring in a two-way tight end, where would Larry Donnell fit? Is he just the third down, you know, tight end, or is he the every down tight end? Where is he going?
Who, Donnell? Who are you talking about, Donnell now?
Larry Donnell. Is he second string now?
Well, I mean, right now he's the starter. He was the starter last year. The Giants haven't brought anybody else in yet. So right now he's the starter.
Right, but if you were to bring in a dual, you know, tight end go both ways on it, where does Larry Donnell, does he take a back seat, or is he up front, you know, start?
I think, Keith, in most situations now in the NFL, most positions, you have a situation where you split time. I mean, besides the offensive line, and the quarterback, obviously, and, you know, wide receiver, you don't have many positions where the same guy's at that position every play. So I think even if you bring in a two-down player, you know, a lot of NFL teams run a lot of two tight end sets, but Ben McAdoo was with the Packers. They ran a bunch of two tight end sets. So I think you could see both Dinell and you could see whoever that two-way tight end in the game at the same time. Whether or not he's the starter, it would depend on how you start the game in you know, what formation. If you're starting in 11 personnel and you want to throw the football, Larry Dinell could start that game. I think there would be a role for Larry Dinell one way or the other, even if you bring in a quote-unquote two-way tight end.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513. One more call, then I'll get to some tweets, I promise you. Let's get to Terrence in New Jersey next. We got two more calls. Terrence, what's going on?
How you doing today?
Well, go ahead, T. What do you got?
I was just asking. Just say we get Brandon Scherff, the ninth pick.
Yeah.
Do you think that it would be wise for us to get another offensive lineman as a draftee in the third round, fourth? Or how do you think we should go about that? Do you think we should go straight after a linebacker or a safety?
The way my philosophy works, Terrence, in these drafts is that once you get to the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round, that's when you really have to pick the best player available because there aren't going to be that many players left on the board in the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, and seventh rounds that are going to be able to be full-time starters in the league. So if there's a guy, and I mean this, regardless of position, I don't care what position he plays, that you get to the third round or the fourth round, you have a starting grade on him, a second-round grade on him, I pick him. I don't care what position he plays. So I'm not going to try to pigeonhole myself into picking a specific position in round three or four. If the best guy on the board is an offensive lineman, and you took an offensive lineman in round one, would I take another one? Heck yeah, if I think he's the best guy there.
Understood. And another thing is, as far as Ryan Nassib goes, do you think that actually a possibility is going to happen or no?
A Ryan Nassib trade?
Yes.
You know what? I'm not sure yet. I think you got to get a little bit more exposure for Nassib for him to establish himself as somebody that can be a starter. I think the people in this building believe he can be a starter. Tom Coughlin said that.
I believe he still has potential.
Yeah, and Tom Coughlin said that at the combine. Look, I could tell you, I probably see Nassib more here this offseason than any other player. He's been not only working out but watching film. He's working his rear end off to become a better player. I'm not sure the value is there quite yet, though, Terrence.
All right, man. That's about it, man. Thanks, man. Have a great day.
Hey, you too, T. Thanks for the call. All right, finally, Alan in Montana will wrap us up. What's going on, Alan? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you. Hey, I was just wondering, what about, I know we need some help on defense. What about bringing A.J. Hawk from Green Bay because they got rid of him? I mean, he'd be a real good leader for the defense, and, you know, he can help out Pierre Paul. And how about all that? I mean, because we really don't need any wide receivers. We have good wide receivers, and we got a good tight end. We just need help on the offensive line to keep the pressure off Manning and also to keep him off his back. Because he's throwing a lot of interceptions is because he's having to throw the ball out before his wide receivers can even get open.
I'm not a big A.J. Hawk guy. He's a 3-4 linebacker. I think he was a disappointment for the most part in Green Bay. I know, and look, I'm not sitting there studying Packer tape, but I know from talking talking to Packer fans that do watch the Packers all the time that they're kind of sick of A.J. Hawk. So
yeah, because A.J. Hawk, he led in tackles for the Green Bay, the Packers.
Yeah, you know what, though? But those tackling stats can be, you know, deceiving. Where are those tackles happening? If those tackles are happening 7-8 yards down the field, who cares? You want a guy's making tackles for loss and tackles at the line of scrimmage. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay, well, how about I know everybody's talking about certain people on the combine for the offensive line, but I haven't heard anybody mention Tomlinson from Duke. I mean, he's a real good. He's got power. He's big.
Yeah, look, I think Lakin Tomlinson's a guy that can be a powerful offensive lineman that can help you later in the draft. I don't think he's a first-round pick, though. I think he's a guy you look at in on day two, round two and round three.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's what I needed to know.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate your call. We like having everybody from around the country. Thanks, pal.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
We can add Montana to the list of states. I think we're missing one of the Dakotas. We haven't gotten a call from one of the Dakotas before. I don't think I've gotten an Arkansas either. Have I gotten Hawaii? I've gotten Alaska. Yeah, I don't know if I've gone to Hawaii yet. That's a good question. I've gone to Vermont. Absolutely. I've gotten New Hampshire. I've gotten all the New England states. But we're getting there. We're almost all 50. And we've gotten almost all the continents, too. We've gotten Asia. We've gotten, I'm not sure if I've gotten Africa yet. I've gotten South America. We have James in Ecuador, our very loyal listener down there. So, well, Ecuador might actually be technically Central American, right? Yeah. We got Ireland. So, yeah, pretty good. Everybody, great job. Have a fantastic weekend. Thank you for joining us. Let me look at tweets really, really, really fast. I promise you guys I would do that today. Let's see. Anything worth mentioning very quickly? Saraceno, go after a 31-year-old Doug Free, but not a 27-year-old Iapati. Well, again, you're looking at value there. You know, if Iapati is making $5 or $6 million more a year than Doug Free, Free might be a better value, especially if you're just going to put him there for a couple years. James Jones, you think we should fall back in the draft to the Vikings pick? I think falling back is always an option, depending on who's on the board. So I think you look at it, but if you think a great player is there at nine, you should pick him because, you know, remember, if you can get an Odell Beckham Jr., and I'm not saying they get another Odell Beckham Jr., that caliber of player, he's there. Do you really want to trade down? I don't think so. Mr. Ruiz 81, we need to do whatever it takes to draft Danny Shelton. Hell, I think he'd be a fine pick, but I wouldn't trade up to get him. There's plenty of good players in the draft. There we go, folks. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next week. We'll have Marks, Meadow, Dottino, the whole crew will be joining us at one point or the other. So stay tuned. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time on Giants.com, everybody.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
What a end-up punch. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants!